can speak. I mean, obviously, you're pretty well known around here, but I wondered, for people who are coming to this interview, if you just talk briefly about your background, where you're from, your education.
Well, I'm I.T. Littleton, and that's Isaac Thomas Littleton. And I came to the D.H. Hill Library in 1959. I was assistant director for technical services. And then within 5 years, I became the director of the library in 1964. Before that, I had gotten a master's in library science from the University of Illinois, and also went back for the doctorate and got my PhD in library science from Illinois in 1968. But while I was working, while I was director here, I was also working on my dissertation and received the degree in 1968. When I got my bachelor's, or not my master's in library science from Illinois in 1951, I came back to North Carolina and worked at UNC Library at Chapel Hill. I was there for 8 years as first the head of circulation department, and then I was assistant to the university librarian, and then I was assistant university librarian until the end of 58. And 1959, January of 1959, I came to NC State as the technical services director and then eventually the director.
And you're a native North Carolinian?
No, I'm originally from Hartsville, Tennessee.
Okay.
But I have my bachelor's degree from UNC. I went to UNC right out of high school and worked in the library there, in the Wilson Library at Chapel Hill, as a student assistant, and I worked for 35 hours a week. Took summer courses and got my degree in 1943.
And then, just so I'm clear, you actually got your PhD at Illinois while you were director of the library here?
Well, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I was working on my PhD. Well, I was working on my dissertation.
Right. Wow. That's
but I went to Illinois for 2 summers. And then for a full year,
right.
And came back as actually as acting director, because Harlan Brown, who was my predecessor, he and I worked very closely together. I was his assistant, and he while I was in Illinois, he decided he wanted to step down as director.
Yes, sir.
And went to the administration and said, well, you know, I'd like to step down as director if you would bring I.T. Littleton back as the director, and I could become associate director. And after Chancellor Caldwell appointed a search committee, they finally decided to offer the appointment of the acting director to me. So I came back in 1964.
I do recall reading about that episode in history.
Mm-hmm.
And
Mr. Brown and I worked together. He was associate and I was director until he retired in 1971.
So Hartsville, Tennessee, is that in the eastern part of Tennessee?
It's in middle Tennessee.
Oh, okay.
Near Nashville.
I thought I placed your accent as North Carolinian.
Well,
and it probably is.
I've been in North Carolina long enough.
Yeah. Right.
for it to stick.
Yes, sir. Well, as you know, the university is celebrating its 50th anniversary of its integration, and part of our contribution is to talk to people
mm-hmm.
who were part of that process. And I wanted to just ask you, in a general way, how do you remember the staff, the process of staff integration unfolding here?
Well, as you know, you must know that in the 1950s, this was a very segregated place. In fact, all universities in the South practically were pretty highly segregated. There weren't any.
Was there an exception? In the South?
Even in Chapel Hill, when I worked there in the 1950s, we had to take African Americans who wanted to use the library. I remember having to take a lady who was African American into a carrel where nobody would see her. It was it was that segregated in the 1950s.
And that was Chapel Hill.
That was Chapel Hill, but it was the same thing here.
Yeah. No, right. Yes, sir.
And there were no blacks on the staff here when I first came, except for a student assistant who was Ed Carson.
Right.
I think that's in the history.
Yes, sir.
And he was the first black person that worked for the library.
Right.
And he was a student assistant. In fact, he was the first African American to get a degree from NC State. And Mrs. Edsel, who was the head of circulation at the time, hired him as a student assistant.
Right.
She was very liberal in her viewpoint and wanted to help African Americans as much as possible.
So
she hired him as a student assistant, and he was the first.
Right.
And I think that was about 1959.
Yes, sir. I believe he just spoke here for the Martin Luther King Day
celebration. Oh, did he?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. And so you had the actual first African American to receive a degree from NC State working in the library as a student.
Yeah,
so
in 1959, I think.
So you guys were obviously on the front line of this.
I think so. I think. It might be a little exaggeration to say that the library was a leader in this, but we had a very committed person on the staff in the person of Cyrus King.
Right.
And he was a civil rights activist. We had a lot of commitment among the people on the staff. And I think the first person we hired was Ed Walker.
Right.
And he was, I forget the date, probably 1960, early 1960s.
I can look it up and put it
it's in here.
Yes, sir.
It's in here.
Yes, sir.
And, but then, according to what some people say is that the library hired the first clerical position.
Right.
American. We've hired the first person for a clerical position who was an African American.
And is that Dorothea Blaylock?
Dorothea Blaylock. And she was. I don't know that date offhand either, but I can get it. I mean, it's in this history.
Yes, sir. I mean,
somewhere.
I can get that in the transcript.
Okay.
We're just here after recollection.
Yeah.
I mean, there was the sense in the library that there was something really dramatic and momentous happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it wasn't just a matter of course.
Well, there were committed people on the staff, particularly Cy King.
Right.
And Harlan Brown.
Yeah.
We were all committed to the idea of integration and helping African Americans. In fact, Mr. King was very active in civil rights marches in Raleigh, and he was very active in that movement.
And so you were sort of, in a way, on the front lines of this. Did you run into any resistance in terms of hiring these people and at this early date.
I don't remember that we did.
Okay. Because there's no law at this point mandating that you would have to do this, right?
Yeah.
You're just doing this.
But in of course, the Civil Rights Act of in the 1960s.
Right.
Yes. Mandated that the university had to hire African Americans, and they had also permit African Americans to be students.
Right.
See, there weren't many students. There weren't. Well, Ed Carson being the first one in
right.
In 1959, I believe.
Yes, sir.
So once the Civil Rights Acts were passed, then the university had to take action, affirmative action.
And when you refer to the Civil Rights Act, you're talking about a state law or the national
Civil Rights Acts.
Right. Okay. So
there were several.
Rights,
but
yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So in the mid '60s, Civil Rights Act '64 and Voting Rights Act '65, and those.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okie doke. And that leads sort of nicely into my next question, which was, there was sort of a legislative mandate in the mid '60s to begin minority hiring.
Right.
To what extent did this sort of serve as a goad to hiring African Americans, or was it something that didn't change much because you were already in the process of hiring?
No, it did change. I mean, we had to make sure that our hiring practices or our recruitment, that we recruited black applicants.
Mm-hmm.
And changed our recruitment activities, policies, to recruit from black or African-American colleges.
Mm-hmm.
So we would we had to make a special effort to recruit African-Americans, which we did. And it was in 1970, we hired our first professional.
Right.
His name was Frazier, William Frazier. And he came on as a reference librarian. And then in 1973, we hired two African Americans in the professional staff.
Okay.
One was Margaret Hunt,
right.
Margaret Rogers, and she came on in 73. And at the same time, Lily Castor came on as the head of the catalog department, and we were pressured by the administration to hire blacks, and we did we started doing that.
So you hired William Frazier in 71.
I think that's right.
And Lily Castor,
maybe
Margaret 70. Hunt in 73.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and these were all professional staff.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Margaret eventually became the head of acquisitions.
Yes, sir.
I think she was assistant acquisitions librarian, but she became the head of acquisitions, and Lily was the head of the catalog department, which was a department head.
Right. I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit about a few people, most of whom you've already mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you remember about Edward Carson and his work in the library?
Well, see, I was fairly new then. I came in 59, and apparently he had already been hired by Mrs. Edsel.
Right.
But I didn't have much actually contact with him except just to see him and know that he was there.
So when you came on staff, he was already here.
He was,
or was
I think,
just roughly the same time.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
See, he was. I was involved in technical processing, technical services.
Yes, sir.
And he was a student assistant in the circulation department.
Okay.
Because Mrs. Edson was the head of circulation.
Okay. How about Edward Walker?
Edward Walker. Yes, he was great. He was our mail clerk.
Okay.
He came on as mail clerk, and then eventually he was promoted to book stack supervisor.
Okay. And William Fraser, what exactly? I know you just talked about this, but just
yeah, he was a reference librarian, but he only stayed about a year.
Okay.
And did not.
And you talked about Margaret Hunt and Lily Castor. What did she do again?
She was head of the catalog department.
Right.
And Margaret Hunt, I think she was assistant acquisitions librarian and then became the head of acquisitions.
Okay. And were there other people you remember playing a big part in integrating the library?
Well, Cy King.
Right.
I've mentioned him.
Yes, sir.
And he was very supportive of, you know, hiring African Americans. But he was very active in the civil rights
right.
struggle. And he was a civil rights activist. And you might want to talk to him.
Yes, sir. That's part of my plan.
Yeah.
I've already called him up, but
oh, good.
I haven't been able to actually get him on the phone. But it's certainly part of our plan to talk to him.
But
Go ahead.
He served on the Good Neighbor Council
okay.
or Good Neighbor Committee. Do you know about that?
No, sir.
Well, he can tell you about that.
Okay.
But he served on it for many years.
Okay.
And that was a committee that endorsed, you know,
okay.
integration. And
yeah, I think my understanding is anyway that Margaret Hunt and Dorothea Blaylock may still live locally.
Yeah, they do. Margaret is still here. I saw her the other day.
Okay.
And I'm sure Doretha is around.
Okay. Were there any Red Letter Days that particularly stand out for you in this process, or was it sort of a gradual thing, as you recall?
Well, I was just glad when we hired the two professionals
right.
In 73. They replaced people who had been here for years.
Right.
Margaret Hunt replaced Ann Turner, who had been here. She retired in 73, but she had been here since 37.
Right.
And Foy Lanberry, who was the head of the catalog department for many years, Lily replaced her.
Okay. Finally, was there anything else you wanted to add about this process or anything about library history or the history of DHL Library in general?
Well, I don't know whether how far afield you want me to get, but
I'm willing to sit here a whole afternoon if you want to. Anything? I thought while we had you here.
Yeah.
Anything you felt like was significant enough to share? I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Would be interesting to hear.
But we did get pressure from although we were committed to it,
yeah.
The administration was always saying that we needed to hire more African Americans.
Right.
And I felt some pressure to do that.
Okay.
From the private office.
But of course, you were very amenable to it anyway.
Oh yeah,
so
sure.
It wasn't any big thing,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But we changed our recruiting procedures drastically. We made sure that we sent announcements of vacant positions to the African American universities in the South.
Yeah. And beyond that, was there any requirement to recruit or to interview a certain number of African American candidates, or
well,
just sort of a nebulous, promise to try to recruit? And I guess what was required of you is what I'm asking.
Well, that we recruit.
Yeah.
Blacks, but that African Americans, and So that's what we started doing. I mean, very, you know, very positively doing it. And it was hard, you know, it was hard to get good applicants or any applicants.
Right.
And
what was hard about it, I guess?
Well, it we just didn't get many applications.
Right.
And we were fortunate that to get Margaret Hunt and Lily Castor, right, who had heard about these positions. But I think we actively recruited her, Margaret particularly, because she worked in the state library at the time.
Right.
And I know I went to a meeting, Solonet board meeting, with the state librarian, and he was telling me about Margaret.
Right.
And so I thought, well, gosh, we need to get her on our staff.
Well, that's right. Yeah, it strikes me.
And we started, you know, contacting her.
Yeah, it strikes me that one of the things that may have been difficult for you and, you know, libraries throughout the South,
yeah,
is the need to, you know, try to hire, all of these libraries to begin to try to hire African-American,
yeah,
candidates at the same time, which seemed, mm-hmm, to create sort of a crunch, I would think. Well, go ahead.
Well, that's okay. Go ahead.
No, we don't just have to talk about this. Of course, you directed this library for, you know, a long time.
Long time. I was here 28 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wonder, you know, while we've got you here, I wonder if you could just talk in a general way or in a very specific way, if you wish, about some of the, some of the changes you saw at the library over that, mm-hmm, entire period. And this can include integration, but it can be subjects further afield.
Well, growth was the main thing. Growth of the building and growth of the collection.
Right.
And growth of the enrollment,
right,
at NC State, and the change to from a really a very small college into a research university.
Right.
And I lived through all those changes.
Right. And if I could ask you to be immodest for a few moments, what you see as some of your major contributions?
Well, we added two building additions, for
right,
one thing. The original tower,
right,
we added in 1971. And then I got the money for adding the second tower, and worked with the architects on that.
Yes, sir.
And it was under construction when Susan came. And the administration said, "Why don't I see?" I was 66.
Yes, sir.
And but the administration says, "Why don't you stay until the building is finished?"
Yes, sir.
But I decided I really needed to leave before then, so I left in the middle of the second tower construction.
Yes, sir.
And Susan came. And I think that was good,
right,
because she added new. Her style was quite different from mine, and she added a lot of modern things which was good.
But you remain quite active in the library in all the time since then.
Oh yeah, well I've certainly been interested in Friends of the Library and so forth.
And you've lived locally all the time since 1987?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I live. My wife and I live on Brookhaven Drive in Raleigh. Mm-hmm.
Terrific. Was there anything else you wanted to add?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, it's been a real pleasure.
But be sure to talk to Cy King.
Certainly will.
Because he can give you probably a broader view than I can.
Yes, sir.
On the total university, because he was on this Good Neighbor Council.
I will certainly do that.
Yeah.